From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We're going to talk holiday happenings, what Brooke and I did over the break, the new Congress. This is number 116. It's a little more diverse. We're going to jump right in and just talk about some of the new members and see what's going on, political and pop culture predictions, and of course, something I'm really, really bad at, New Year's resolutions. Brooke, how's it going?
It's going well. It's good to be back in the saddle here and in the studio recording.
Definitely. I'm excited to be back here, and I've got a lot of thoughts over the holiday happenings. I don't know what you did, Brooke, but I had a lot of fun, and it seemed like a lot of work, though, because as our regular listeners know, I've got two kids under two, and that's quite a lot to take in sometimes. It's sort of like, you know, you think you're getting a break, but you're not really getting a break because you're just doing a lot of stuff trying to entertain them.
Yeah, you get off of work, but then you get put to work at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not really restful those first few years.
They're precious. I did read a lot, so that was exciting.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I got some opportunities to read. You know, when you get the kids in bed, then I can read because I'm not I'll watch TV sometimes, but I'm not a big TV junkie where I just sit and watch TV, so...
Were you reading like fiction, nonfiction?
What sort of books? I have a hard time reading fiction. I've gotten a little bit better over the years, but it was primarily nonfiction. I read a book called Into Thin Air, finally. It had been on my bookshelf for a while. It was by John Krakauer, who's written several famous books, but it's about the Everest disaster. I think it was 1996. Anyways, like 10 or 11, 12 people died on Everest that year. And so it just kind of covered some of the things going on there.
You like history, so that doesn't surprise me that you chose that book.
Yeah, it's really well written, and I'm surprised I hadn't read it because I've heard so many great things about it. And there's a movie made out of the book. I think it's just called Everest. I think there's actually Into Thin Air, too. There's a couple movies based on this book. So, I mean, it's a very infamous event in the, you know, I'm not a mountain climber, but it's an infamous event in mountain climbing history.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so I've been reading Redeeming Capitalism by Kenneth Barnes.
Oh, yeah,
I've heard
of the book.
It's a really, really good book.
Good.
And so that's just talking about going back to a more virtue-based society that promotes capitalism in a way to advance the common good.
Yeah, so not this materialist view of capitalism where it's just all about having everything you want.
Right.
And, you know, just sort of this view that you can just do what you want in sort of in a free market economy.
Yeah, yeah. So I did a little bit of reading, but to be honest with you, I watched a lot more TV than I ever typically do.
Yeah, and you saw Mary Poppins.
I saw Mary Poppins,
oh
and
gosh.
I saw it at this really, really cool theater called the Alamo, the Alamo Draft House. And it's very retro, kind of hipsterish. So you can check out VHS if you happen to even have a VHS player anymore. You can also check out DVDs for free.
Right.
And then you can get, like, I got a gin tonic delivered to my seat there in the theater while I'm watching Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I've heard
wonderful.
Some of those places. I mean, I went to a theater in Chicago that was similar to like that. You could get beer or different drinks.
And
it was actually somewhat affordable, you know, for a theater. It was just sort of a neighborhood type theater.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about Mary Poppins, because I saw something, I don't know if it was National Review, but it was talking about there was some sort of socialist angle.
So City Journal, I didn't see the National Review.
Okay. I think National Review wrote up on it too.
But City Journal did a piece on it, and they were kind of saying this isn't like the original Mary Poppins. They're basically allowing the father in this Mary Poppins to be perpetually young and promoting this perpetual childhood. And I get that that's a problem in society.
Yeah, big problem.
I didn't see it in Mary Poppins, though. To me, it was just a beautiful, wonderfully done movie with great songs. It's different than the original Mary Poppins in some ways, but I don't think they should have ever set out to try to be the original Mary Poppins anyways. It needed to have the 2018 flavor. And I think they did a great job. The costumes were excellent. I want to dress like Mary Poppins at least once a month now. So if I'm coming into the office looking like Mary Poppins.
You could probably pull that off, I think. Yeah,
I mean, I'm convinced I can. So I'm going to make a go of it. So it was good.
Good. Do you like Julie Andrews better or the new...
Emily Blunt?
Yeah. I mean, you can't really compare them, right?
Yeah, they're so different. They're women from a different era, and so they behave like women from different eras, even if they're trying to replicate this other period of time that's even fictionalized and things like that. So I like both of them, but for different reasons. But I really like Mary Poppins' personality in this one and the original, in the sense that Mary Poppins has this kind of false humility about her, where she knows she's sure. like the bee's knees, and yep. she's a pretty amazing nanny, and so she acts humble, but she really knows that what she's talking about. So I have an appreciation for that, because sometimes I feel like I know what I'm talking about, but you know, everybody else just has to recognize that sometimes.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, so saw Mary Poppins, but I also decided over Christmas break, because I was spending so much time with my children, to highlight some of the funny things that my five-year-old says.
Yeah, he's pretty comical.
He is pretty comical. So my five-year-old, who is the fourth child, and so kind of has to blaze his own trail in the home, he likes to say funny things. So I'm going to read a couple of them. So one day, my five-year-old comes up to me and says, "Mommy, remember that day when you said you love me 1,000% and you love Daddy 0%? I said, "I never said that." And he said, "Yes, you did. And it was the best day ever." And he said it in front of my husband, and then grabs my hand and starts kissing it and looking at my husband to see if he'll notice. So I think he was like trying to incite jealousy, but be funny about it. So I thought it was, you're not laughing, but I thought it was cute.
I love, especially Abe, any sort of, wisdom and insight that he offers up on Facebook. I really like, especially like the flirting he does with you.
Yes. Yeah, so. It's funny. It's no, cute. But one other thing that he told my other son was, he called my other son a burnt chicken nugget. And then my son asked him to please stop saying that. And then my 5-year old said, "Hey, stop, you're fired. I'm calling 919-911 on you."
Wow.
So, anyways, I get highly entertained by what my child is saying.
Yeah, kids are so entertaining. It's fun. It's fun to watch James, especially. He's almost 2. Some of the stuff that he says and does, I mean, it always cracks me up. He's a funny cat.
Do you write any of those things down?
Yes, I do. He's very into cheering for himself. He's very, aww, like, kind of like his mom like that. If he does something, he's like, "Yay, James," you know.
Does Kelly do that too?
One time at Campbell, guys will appreciate this story. I walked up to the urinal. He was on my shoulders. And after I was done, he goes, "Dad, go potty, yay!" You know, and everybody's kind of looking around like, oh.
Okay, is that what you do at home? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So anyways, clearly Ray and I had a bunch of fun moments with our family members.
Yeah, and I went to the Orange Bowl down in Miami. So I spent a few days down in Miami with my father-in-law and a couple of brother-in-laws, and we had a fun time down there. I hadn't been to Miami since like Miami Vice was a top show. So it was nice going somewhere really in the 80s.
80s? Okay, I was about to say early 90s.
But... Well, I meant like in the temperature-wise, it was in the early 80s.
Oh,
or low 80s. I should have said low 80s. I messed
Vice.
Up.
Miami Vice. Yeah. Like, when was Miami Vice?
Oh, definitely mid to late 80s. Yeah. Okay. My mom had a crush on Don Johnson. I don't know if she's watching, but she was big into Don Johnson. Yeah.
I don't know what he looks like. So.
Okay. You'll have to Google him if you want. You don't have to.
I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, yeah, so you got to go to the Orange Bowl, and that was with your father-in-law.
Yeah, he's a huge Alabama fan, so he was very generous to take me along. I was really impressed with the stadium down there in Miami. It's called Hard Rock Cafe or Hard Rock Stadium. It's pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah, I'll have to say. And it's kind of a nice area. Miami's, you know, a little lot of money. I don't know if there's a big middle class there. It seems like it's a lot of money or not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a neat place. And I had to use my Spanish a little bit, which is really bad. So en español, por favor. And which is a lot of fun down there. So I had a good time. And it was a good break from the kids. But we stayed at an Indian casino. That was a little different.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, that's neat. I'm glad you had a fun time. I know that something that happened this week, and before we move on to talking about Congress, but this week it was National Introverts Day. Did you know that?
Wow. I think I'm slightly introverted for sure. So I did not know that.
Have you taken one of those personality tests that kind of puts
you on
the spectrum?
So, yeah. I think I'm a little more probably on the introverted side. But I'm not as introverted as you would think, as some people might think. I mean... Need some space, though, from sort of like constant socializing. I can't do constant socializing. I have to like step back and have some space to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciate the introverts in my life. I am not an extreme extrovert, but I'm definitely an extrovert.
Yeah, I would say you are.
I get energized from other people, but I really appreciate the introverts in my life, but primarily because they give me time to talk.
Right.
Because they're just quiet. So typically quiet.
Yeah. I mean, I remember taking a vocation test in middle school, And one of the things it said I should be, and this is totally introverted, I think, it recommended commercial fisherman or journalist. And journalists are definitely introverted in many ways because they're observers. They have observer personalities. So
yeah, and you are very observant.
So anyways.
Hats off to you, Ray.
Thank you, yes. Okay. My son would be like, yay, da-da.
Yes, exactly. So let's go ahead and hop into this, because you talked about how this is the first day, the day that we're recording here, which is January 3rd. The first day of the 116th Congress.
Yes, there's some new Congress members, the biggest class of women ever, I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the first, I saw someone tweet out they were the first Native American female congresswoman, but then I was wondering about Liz Warren. I was like, how is
that? That's another debate to be had, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like, that's really awkward. I was like, you totally stole her thunder there.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, there's a lot more diversity. You've got a Muslim female in Congress now. You've got
you have two Muslim women in Congress.
Oh, two?
One is from Somalia.
Okay.
And then the other is from, I'm trying to look it up right now. There was there are two Muslim women, Rashida Tlaib, I'm butchering that last name, and Ilhan Omar. They're both Ilhan Muslim Omar. American women.
I had heard of Ilhan Omar, but not the other lady.
Yep. So, and then compared to even just the previous Congress, the previous House, which had 87 women, the new one has 102 female members.
Wow.
And that's, again, a significant jump just within
definitely
one term. So.
So how do you feel? I mean, you feel like a lot of girl power right now?
I feel empowered right now.
Yeah, there's a ton of girl power going on.
No, I think that it opens up the discussion like what we're having right now with respect to women in politics, and really how much does gender play a role in how policymakers and lawmakers handle things. Like, we do look at things a little bit differently based on our gender, but I don't know how much, if it's discernible enough, or if it is more boiled down to personality types with despite genders. But you know, the unfortunate thing I find though is that most of these new congresswomen are Democrats, and so it's not really, it's kind of one-sided. There are some Republican women.
Yeah, there's a few.
They got largely attacked by the Democrats, though. So it wasn't like the Democrats were being pro-woman regardless when they were championing people to be elected into office. It was more or less, you know, as long as you subscribe to these policy values, which include abortion, which is obviously absolutely a no-go for a conservative woman to
support.
It
should be, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Totally abhorrent.
And so, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for the Republicans and conservatives more broadly when it comes to having a conversation about how to empower females in conservative circles to actually rise to office if they want to, but they don't have to. I don't necessarily think one gender over the other.
Yeah,
is going
I've always
to be
felt
better.
It was awkward. Both parties are awkward, I think, when it comes to sort of pandering to females. But the Republican Party tends to be a little bit more awkward. I mean, you see some of these like rallies, and you know, remember the W for Women signs, and then you know all these other sort of signs that were so and so grandmothers, moms for this and that. And to me, I don't know. I guess I just don't get in. Maybe it's because I'm not female, but I don't get into sort of that sort of baseless pandering. Mm-hmm. I just see through it. So when I see sort of that pandering, sometimes when you see in political campaigns, it just sort of tunes me off. And I don't know if it's because I'm not a woman, or it's just, I just see it as really cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's something to be said about seeing someone represent you, whether it's someone from your same sort of ethnic background,
sure,
or gender,
sure,
or age group representing you. I think there's a powerful element to that. However, when we're just judging based on these externals, and you know, it can become pretty shallow pretty quickly if someone just really isn't equipped to lead in that way and doesn't have a good sense of wisdom, good character. Then I really don't care if it's a male or a female. I just want good leaders. So anyways, it's interesting though, and I think there is cause to celebrate that there are more women.
I saw the Republican Party to put two female senators on the Judiciary Committee, Marsha mm-hmm. Blackburn and Joni Ernst, I believe it were the two. And I think this was a response to having all white male Judiciary Committee during the Kavanaugh hearings.
On the Republican
sort of,
side.
Yeah, the optics of that. So
yeah,
we're seeing them respond to that situation from the last Congress as well. So, but, I mean, you know, we focused on a lot of these new House members that are female, that are Democrats, but there were several new female senators. And, of course, Martha McSally in Arizona is going to be appointed to that seat, or or was appointed to that seat that after McCain passed away. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw her on Twitter today. She had a cute outfit on. A
lot of new female senators mm-hmm. in the Republican Party. So that's interesting and fascinating too. So it'll be interesting to see if the Republican Party can make inroads with females, because Trump sort of has set them back to some degree, so to speak, at least from an electoral standpoint. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of manifests itself going forward.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. Republicans, if they hope to make some inroads in among the female demographic, especially suburban women, they're going to have to rework some messaging. So anyways, but okay. Not all is well, though, in this new Congress with Democrats controlling the House. It seems like there's some angst among.
Absolutely. There's among a lot of division. Democrats. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of progressive Democrats. We have this going on with debates about PAYGO, which is something that was enacted in Congress a few years back that, you know, you have to actually you can't just fund something and add to the deficit without taking the funding from somewhere else or raising taxes. So you have to actually keep at current proposal spending levels in terms of you can grow the budget, but you can't appropriate new things without the funding. So there's a lot of leftists that want Nancy Pelosi to get rid of PAYGO. I think that vote's coming up today. But also just in general, I mean, there's a lot of angst about getting rid of Trump. What does the timeline look for with impeachment with some on the hard left? They want impeachment hearings right away. They want some of these hearings fast-tracked to do something about Trump. So there's going to be a lot of pressure pushing back against Pelosi and trying to check some of those things. And I think it'll be interesting for the speaker, Pelosi, who's really the first woman speaker. I mean, she's been speaker before, but she's still the first female speaker in history, and how she sort of navigates some of those things with some of the harder left in her party. I mean, she's pretty hard left, but she's got some women and other constituents, certainly the Black Caucus to some degree, who are going to be pushing her even further to the left, and how she responds to that as sort of a national leader and how she navigates a lot of that pushback.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, is that there are some divisions among as left as Pelosi is to the really, really hard left. One of them is this whole Green New Deal. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, but is it related to this green energy stuff? Or
so it's the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. Okay. And so some of the new Democrats want to make sure, like Ocasio-Cortez, want to make sure that this is a top issue for Democrats. And they said that this committee would address social, economic, racial, regional, and gender-based justice inequality as it pertains to climate change. So very, very broad.
If you can't see me, I'm rolling my eyes, folks. It's just, I just don't know if I'm ready to jump back into some of this stuff.
That's what some of these fledgling members of Congress are trying to enact that are Democrats. Whereas Pelosi is, like Ray said, as far left as she can be sometimes, she's like having to put the kibosh on that. Yeah. And so there is this infighting because there's that more radical element, just like both sides can have more radical elements, right? Yep. And so you look at what's really politically feasible. You've got the Republican majority in the Senate. How are you going to work together? You got a Republican in the White House. And so I think it's fascinating. But yeah, there's trouble in paradise already.
Oh, no doubt. And I think Ocasio-Cortez and women like her and other progressives are really the future of the Democratic Party, not Nancy Pelosi. And so you're going to see a lot of that tension in this new Congress. And I think if they aren't feel like they're delivering to their constituents, I think the tension will ratchet up. And it'll be up to President Trump if he's able to exploit some of that tension to a positive aspect in terms of his own governance and his own reelection prospects, which are probably in jeopardy now, I would think, to some degree.
Oh, with all of the latest just
general. I mean, I think, Democrats are very emboldened through this partial government shutdown, and Trump somewhat has painted himself into a corner where I don't think he can cave, and Democrats aren't going to cave because they feel like the president's unpopular. So it'd just be interesting. It's just a reminder of how dysfunctional our politics in Washington really is right now. And it'll be interesting to see how some of this stuff unfolds, because Trump has put everything on border security and put everything on the wall. And I think he's in a position where he knows he can't fold on this. And if he does, I think it'll really upset his reelection chances in 2020.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think this partial government shutdown is going to continue?
I think it could go on for over a month. It's possible. Just because I think Trump knows that he doesn't really have, he knows that he can't back down on this. I mean, he's got Lindsey Graham and other people that are supporting him, but he knows he can't cave on this. And he maybe he can compromise, but he can't cave. And Democrats right now are not willing to compromise. They're willing to ride this out because they feel like, well, they're probably fundraising off of it, and they know that they're that you know that their base wants them to stand tall too and stand pat. So my guess is this could go on for a little while, and I'll, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, but it would not surprise me if this goes on a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was reading something, you had mentioned it to me before, but it's by Joe Carter, and he was writing this for the Acton Institute blog. It's also on the Foundation for Economic Education website, and it's 15 things you need to know about the government shutdown. I thought that was informative, but one of the things that he wrote was that evidence suggests that shutdowns tend to cost, not save money.
No, I think there's some truth to that, especially when you're fundamentally laying off all these workers, but not really laying them off because they'll get their jobs back. They're not doing anything, and so when they come back, they're given their back pay retroactively in full. So, you know, and just sort of some of the cleanup they have to do from the federal worker side, it can end up costing more money. So there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So how many days are we at now? Do you know how long it's been?
Well,
so far?
Most people haven't really paid attention because it's been over the holidays. Yeah. But I think we're like, you know, we're a little over a week in. I believe.
I think even a little longer than that.
Maybe,
I'm not
yeah,
sure,
maybe
but...
2 weeks. So, yeah. I mean, I think the longer it goes on, in some ways, may help Trump because I think at some point we'll be fine. Well, you know, they're basically arguing over $5.6 billion, which is nothing. You know, in Washington. I mean,
well, if the last government shutdown or one of the most recent ones cost $1.4 billion,
yeah.
Then yeah, I mean, 5.6 to this compromise is, over isn't that big.
Yeah, he's asking for 5.6 or something like that on the border wall, and that's like an accounting error in the Department of Defense. So, I mean, at some point, people might say, well, why don't Democrats just negotiate with them or give in to some degree? Because we're not talking. Unfortunately, that's not a lot of money in Washington. I mean, you know, it's depressing about the amount of money they spend, but we'll talk about that on a different podcast.
Yeah, we like to talk about that. And
we should jump on into these predictions.
Yes. Okay. So we want to talk about predictions for 2019, what we foresee coming down the road. So we thought of a couple pop culture.
Do you have any happy predictions?
Ones.
I'm looking at my list and I'm
oh,
like,
I've got a very happy one.
Okay, good.
But it's not really a prediction. It's just something that's a given.
Okay.
And that's that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry are going to have a baby. And the baby's going to be so cute. I'm just sure of it. So I can't decide if the baby's going to have red hair, though.
Are you actually excited about this, or are you playing
yes.
a character?
No, I think it's going to be great. I woke up at like 5 in the morning to watch our royal wedding. My daughter and I did. We made scones, and it was just great. So anyways, no, I think they're going to be good parents, I would hope. I don't know much about their personalities,
per se, I don't know.
You know, there's something about royalty and that idea, and
they probably don't change
baby.
A lot of diapers is my guess as they got nannies.
I'd be okay with that. I'd
yeah,
be okay
no,
with being
I mean, I'm
royalty
not,
and
I'm not bashing them per se. Yeah. I just feel like they're probably not getting their hands super super dirty.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, even I know this is depicted in The Crown, which I've seen some of, but you know, in some of the few books that I've read on the royal family and stuff is that you know, a lot of these kids had very disengaged relationships with their parents mm-hmm. because they just weren't raised by their parents so much. At least, you know, it's kind of like, you know, these Southern planters in some ways, they were closer to the nannies that raised them than their mm-hmm. actual parents.
So. Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's something that even in our busy workaholic culture, just everyday Americans, whether you have a nanny or not, it can be this this problem of just kind of giving other people the responsibility or the TV the responsibility to raise a child. And so there is much warning to take from that.
No doubt.
Need to learn from it. But another newsworthy item that's going to be happening this year is Woodstock turns 50. Not
wow.
Woodstock from Snoopy.
No, I know.
The concert.
Yeah, I mean, I remember living in Egypt in 1968. Was a 25-year anniversary. I think I was 1993 or something. And I'm thinking, wow. And now we are 50 years in. It's another 25 years after that. So it just shows you how old I am. And
they're going to have another Woodstock this year, though.
Didn't they do this a few years back? Was it 40 years? I remember.
I'm not sure.
People tried to crash it again, but it was too corporate, and they didn't let them happen. But, yeah, I mean, some of that music I like, some of it I don't. That'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if some of the original Woodstock artists perform again. So we've got Santana that could possibly perform.
Is Joe Cocker still alive? I have no idea.
I'm not sure.
He was a big one.
I'm not sure. The Grateful Dead, part of their band, might join up again. The Who, there are a couple of people left there, I guess.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't listen to that kind of music. So
Joe
I mean,
Cocker
Santana.
Died in 2014. So
oh, okay.
He will not be there.
He would not be there at Woodstock. But I thought that was kind of interesting. We'll see, though, because one of the original planners of Woodstock will not be part of this one. And he plans to start his
corporate.
Own. I don't know. Maybe he did. Perhaps it's seeing some of the same problems that it saw when they tried to do it last time. So anyways, those are some pop culture things. But give me some political predictions.
Well, I think one of the good things, if you're conservative, and this is something, you know, we pay attention to, and some of the reason why some of us voted for Trump is the judiciary. The judicial nominations for the conservative judges that are probably going to get amped through the Senate much quicker than they did in the last Congress, because you've got a couple more Republican senators than you did last time. So that's good news for conservatives. And Trump is slowly remaking the federal judiciary with the help of the Federalist Society. And so I think that's a real positive thing if you're conservative, because there's been so much activism in our courts. And so one of the positive things that Trump has really done is kept to his word and put forward judges that are conservatives and that have very good judicial philosophy. So I'm excited about that. I think that's a positive thing that's happening in this country that doesn't get a lot of attention necessarily, at least on the nightly news or to some degree. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely remaking the federal judiciary. It's a long haul, and he needs to be reelected if he's going to continue to do this. I think that have a lasting and significant and meaningful impact, but he's already started well on that road. So that's one I would say is big. And then sort of on the downside, I don't think we're going to see any sort of progress in Washington on the federal deficit or federal budget. I mean, that's just depressing.
Yeah, sadly, they're going to continue to spend us into.
Have you seen the movie Thelma and Louise?
No.
Okay, well, there's a scene at the end where they just drive the car off the cliff in the suicide pact. And that's how I feel like what's going on in Washington with some of the spending. It's going to wipe out our savings, our retirement. I mean, the federal government is going to be lustful and going after revenue at some point. And so I'm just pessimistic. One day they may go start raiding private retirement accounts and things like that to sort of, get the sort of monetary stuff that they need to keep on their spending binge. So it's very depressing, especially when we now live in a culture that doesn't really understand what the purpose of government is. So we just keep spending. Yeah.
And so
I don't see any
money.
End of that. And all it does is create more government and more dependency in this nation, because you have a lot of people who are in debt too. And so they don't care about the federal deficit and debt. And so this cycle just is never ending and very depressing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. It's an unfortunate prediction, but it's one that's the nature of the beast right now, until Washington, actually the people in Washington that we've elected, are willing to do what needs to be done.
I don't think they'll be willing to do anything unless the constituents are willing to hold them accountable. So, you know, we don't hold our congressmen or elected officials accountable on this issue. So it just, you know, the can just perpetually gets kicked down the road, and it's awful.
Mm-hmm. Well, one prediction that I have before we close up the radio segment of this, and if you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to stay on, because we'll talk for a couple more minutes. But that's that there's going to be a lot more lawsuits here in the state of North Carolina.
No doubt.
We have now a 5-2 split in the Supreme Court at the state level. So 5 left-leaning justices and 2 conservative ones. And so you will see, like the Southern Coalition for Social Justice already issued a lawsuit on voter ID implementation. So that was done at the state level. The NAACP issued one at the federal level. So we're just going to see a lot more.
It's no longer sue till you're blue. It's like sue till you're black and blue.
There you go. That's kind of sums it up, I think.
Yeah.
So that's one of our predictions. But we at Civitas are committed to continuing to fight to remove barriers to freedom and also push back against the attacks that are coming our way, coming the way of conservatives that would try by other people. On the left that would really try to do damage to the policy landscape of our state. We've made some great strides this year, as well as the past several years, with regard to taxes going down, spending being reined in. These are powerful, important decisions that had to be made, and they were made by our legislators. But we need to continue to hold them accountable, as well as encourage them to implement really good policies.
And I hope that the North Carolina General Assembly, the Republicans have majorities. They lost their super majorities, but I hope that they continue to govern as conservatives. Mm-hmm. I know that in some areas I've been disappointed, some areas I've been pleased, but I hope that they act like they're still in the majority and continue to take their mandate that they have and try to push for lower taxes, try to push for things that really, I think, gird down to more of our fundamental view of government in terms of protecting property, protecting the right of the individual, and lifting up people to give them opportunities to succeed, not just create a culture of dependency that has really just destroyed much of the great values and characters of this great nation.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Ray. So if you're listening on the radio, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Hey, one last thing, Brooke. We had somebody who sent in a check because he listened to CivaTalk.
Yes.
So if you're ever in an opportunity to give, we really appreciate it because there's some things we want to do to expand the show. So thank you. You know who you are out there. So
thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
Okay, take care.